Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Joyce Barry and Friends, the number one worldwide radio show. The show's outrageous and it's contagious. It will lift your spirits high, you'll feel that you can fly. Transform your attitude, fill it with gratitude. Cut loose and improvise, it's coaching time today. Joyce is a great coach with an extraordinary approach. Fast on the upbeat, top of the heap. A wild motivator, great stimulator. Unstoppable in a humoristic way. Life lessons with passion, joyfully today. You want Joyce as your coach if you want this to be your best year ever.
Coach Joyce here. I want this to be your best year ever. I want this to be my best year ever. I want this to be the best year ever for Gary King, his friends, and his family. And we want this to be the best year ever for all our friends and followers and loyal listeners worldwide.
Joyce, Barry, and Friends, the number one radio show. You might be wondering why this is so. Memorable quotes, life lessons, and so much more. The Coach's Corner will make you soar. All outstanding guests that we love to feature. You will find the show to be the best teacher. Great authors like Ted Tsiuba and Bernie Siegel. Awesome leaders that soar like an eagle. Beverly Nadler with Here's to Your Health. Home business opportunities to increase your wealth. Kurt's impersonation and improvisation add to the show's transformation, broadcasting live across America and around the globe with timely topics and issues to probe. The chat room is always fun. We see your comments and appreciate each one. Want to change your life? Change your approach.
And hire me, Joyce Barry, as your coach. And here I am. Folks, one of my favorite topics, maybe it's yours as well, sex. Physical and emotional intimacy. Bette Midler poses the question, if sex is such a natural phenomenon, how come there are so many books on how to do it? In this show, our special guest, Gary King, will not tell you how to do it. However, he will discuss such things as physical attraction, the impact of social media, emotional risk, emotional and physical intimacy, and so much more. Woody Allen says, love is the answer, but while you're waiting for the answer, sex raises some pretty good questions. Gary King is the author of The Happiness Formula. Let's see if there is a correlation between happiness and sex. So first of all, let me welcome our special guest, Gary King. Great topic. We want to give you a very special welcome.
Hi, Joyce. Good morning. It's always a great pleasure to be on your show. And of course, the topic of sex is a mystery topic. It's a dilemma, to say the very least. So I'm really enjoying today's show, and as I have all the rest of them. So let's get started.
And before we get to the topic of sex, let's get to the topic of who is Gary King, an international speaker, author, and successful entrepreneur whose background is diverse and exhilarating, including powerboat racing, internationally known artist and sculptor, honored by President Bill Clinton, and general manager and vice president of sales and marketing in the TV industry. Gary's life story is filled with amazing home runs and the worst strikeouts imaginable, yet he ventures forward with the heart and soul of a victor. His new book, The Happiness Formula, The Ultimately Life Makeover, was released on May 26, 2016, and maintains a 5-star rating on Amazon. He has also signed a movie contract for the book with Voyage Media. Gary's show on The Happiness Formula is in our archives. It aired live on December 2, 2016, and you can access that 24/7. Without further ado, I bring to you a truly a Renaissance man and a friend, Gary King.
Thanks, Joyce. Let me add a little bit to what you just shared that qualifies what I'm going to talk about today in regard to physical, emotional intimacy and sex. So over the last 25 years, I worked in the personal development industry. Through that industry, filtered 6 million people worldwide. I traveled all over the world for 25 years. During that time, not a part of my function in that industry, I interviewed thousands of people worldwide. So in every culture, every age group, gender, so forth. I also, for 12 years, I spoke yearly at women's retreats in the U.S. That were located around the U.S. So I had a chance to do a tremendous amount of research. I asked a lot of the whole reason I was doing it was to get information. And, of course, the book that you spoke of, that book is all about the why. It's not about the how or what, it's about the why. It's about why we do what we do, why we are what we are, why we think what we think. So that's my background. Here's the disclaimer. I'm going to make a bunch of statements. I've done a lot of research. The disclaimer is, obviously, I haven't interviewed 7 billion people on this planet. So the things I talk about will not apply to every single man and woman. A lot of it is generalizations based on 25 years of research. So that gives clarity to what my background is and how I came up with the information.
Well, I think that's all quite fascinating. I know that you research everything, and I know that you speak internationally. I know that you've had many encounters with all kinds of people all over the world. So we can't wait to hear your words of wisdom.
Thank you. So let's start out just purely going right directly to the subject of sex, where it is today versus where it was when I grew up. I grew up in the 50s and 60s, okay? 50s and 60s. It was not part of entertainment. There was no social media. And back in the 50s and 60s, there was a clear foundation of virtues, morals, and ethics that, for the most part, I will say, has been cast aside in the 21st century. Again, a general statement. So back then, sex or physical intimacy was a very different subject dealt with in a very different way. So that brings me to, is physical attraction a healthy relationship strategy? Now, in my past talks, I talk a lot about, and I'll bring it up again because it is directly part of this series, which is, you know, I ask audiences to write down the five things, the five qualities that they look for in a person they want to date, be in a relationship with, or ultimately marry or raise a family with. Now, this is the key to the whole thing. This is the starting point. This is the beginning point, because people who write down physical attributes on this list of five things, there are no right answers, there are no wrong answers, but whatever you write down as your five top qualities in order of importance, if you start writing down things like tall, blonde hair, whatever that has to do with physical attraction, I can almost assure you from my research that relationships like that will have an extremely short shelf life, very short shelf life, because they're built with a lack of foundations, which are things like trust and honesty and integrity and things like that. So there's nothing wrong with physical attraction. You just can't build a long-term relationship on it. The shelf life is short. Now, currently, social media has turned the whole thing into, I'm not even sure what word to connect to what social media has done to the world of morals or lack thereof and sex. It's just open season. It's open season with a common term nowadays called sexting. So we have open season on physical contact, but what's more disturbing, and I just need to put this in here, what's more disturbing is statistically, this is starting out now in schools at 11 years old, and that needs to be addressed. That's another subject that needs to be addressed because that's disturbing. An 11-year-old child does not have any emotional capacity to deal with all of the complications of sex. And there's a lot of complications. There's emotional complications, there's physical complications, and there's health complications as well. So we're going down a very interesting path that needs some resolve, and the only resolve is going to come through education, public education. That's the only way to address it. So does sex cause people to objectify their partner? Absolutely. No question about it. I watch my friends and I listen to the stories they tell me, and from the women's retreats, to begin with, there is a term, and I was recently researching this, there is a term called making love. Now, when you research that, when you Google that term, making love, you will find that, or I found that, 100% of the feedback from people about that term is they do not like that term at all. Not at all. I only found a few people who could relate to the term making love. You can make a lot of things. You can make a cake. You can make a pie. Can you actually manufacture love? Well, love in and of itself can be a noun and it can be a verb. It can be either one. And love in and of itself, and I've said this before and I'll repeat it again, love is one of the most misused words in the English language. Love in and of itself, if you exist in this world and you have no self-love, you don't respect yourself, you look in the mirror, you don't like your body shape and size, you don't literally love yourself, and then you put yourself out into the world and you expect somebody to do that job for you, you're not going to get very far. And so making love, well, to begin with, sex is a mechanical act. That's what it actually is. It's a mechanical act. It is two people acting out different ways and different things, for the most part, two reasons: self-gratification or gratifying another person. But the actual action of sex is mechanical. It's a mechanical action. Now, if you research it, you will find some psychologists, you'll find some people who add some quotes like composed of a single soul inhabiting two bodies. So it's the connection of two souls that create one soul. You will find things like that. But in reality, sex is a mechanical activity. It is designed to get instant gratification. It's designed to, by design, it can create emotional relief from stress. It's a stress reliever. And in my research with married couples, people who have been married from 7 to 15 years, I'll ask a question to the female, and this is not in the presence of her husband or significant other. I'll ask the question, okay, in regard to physical intimacy, and physical intimacy is just sex by another word, and intimacy actually stands for you're allowing someone to look inside you. Now, how many people actually do that today? Well, if I were going to guess at a percentage, I would say 90-10, and I'm being conservative because it's probably more like 95-5. How many people are comfortable being vulnerable and allowing somebody to look inside them emotionally? Because as soon as you start to do that, you run a risk. You run the risk of being judged. You run the risk of being abandoned. And, you know, that goes back to my statement. I'll back up a little bit. That goes back to my statement about sex happening with 11 and 12-year-olds. Well, everything in life is based on the word why. It's not what or how, it's why. So what is the why behind that? Well, if you look at the why, you'll find out that the why has to do with validation. Please like me, please love me, please find me attractive. And at that age, that can continue on through adult life. So when I ask females in women's retreats or in interviews, okay, you've been married 15 years. Tell me about the physical intimacy. When did the physical intimacy, physical contact, when did it change? At what point in your 15-year marriage did it change? And they'll think for a minute, and they'll go, well, at about 7 years. And I go, so tell me what that means. It changed at 7 years. Did the frequency change? Did the quality change? What changed? And they'll stand there and they'll think, and then I'll go, well, let me add something to the question. At 7 years, was the physical intimacy the same as it was during the first 6 months to 12 months? And, of course, at that point, they stop and go, no. No, it wasn't the same. And so am I to assume by your answer that the reality of it is your 15-year marriage, the physical intimacy shifted between 6 and 12 months? Yes, it did. Then you go back to the reason why. Why did it shift? Because it always goes back to why. Why did it shift? Because what I discovered over 25 or 30 years of doing this, that emotional intimacy, intimacy emotionally, facilitates and drives physical intimacy. And the opposite also exists, especially in men. When a man is physically intimate early on, and I'll use first week, second week, all right, they're physically intimate with somebody they meet in the first week or two. The man tends, generalization, to pull back emotionally. He tends to pull back emotionally. He withdraws emotionally. And the reason he does that is because he perceives a risk in being emotionally available after he's been physically available. The other thing about men, again, a generalization, is the act of sex with a man causes a completely different end result than it does with the woman most of the time. And a man it inspires a man in the external world. It's almost like an adrenaline fix. So the man has a sexual encounter, it's fulfilling, and it drives the man to go out in the external world and produce. A woman tends to shift internally. So it doesn't produce the same result. But you go back to the why. The why is the most important thing. The why creates everything in life. So if physical intimacy, and it seems to be across the board, or at least it is and has been in my interviews, I only found, looking back, 5% of couples who said that their physical intimacy had not shifted at all in a 15-year marriage. And then you couple that to the fact that when it starts, it's usually short-term gratification, and then it turns into a relationship that sometimes can be an obligation. That's a difficult thing to cope with, but it is a reality. It turns into an obligation. And then people stay in relationships that really are not emotionally or physically fulfilling. People start out with imaginary relationships. And that's why I've always said don't have relationships with people's potential. Have a relationship with the person as they are in the moment, not their potential to be a different person or be more loving or more honest or more open or more emotionally available, because chances are it's not going to happen. Actually, chances are the reverse will happen as a protection strategy. And then on top of that, you get into the whole sex being used as a form of manipulation to manipulate people emotionally into getting what you want. That goes back to the misuse of the word love. Love a lot of times is I want, I need. It's not I love me, consequently I love you. It's I need something from you that I don't currently have emotionally. So I need physical touch to validate me that I'm attractive or that I'm worthy or that I'm enough. And that pathway right there, that's a hollow pathway. That doesn't lead to fulfillment. It doesn't lead to emotional fulfillment at all. But I will share with you a personal story. This story is about a married couple that I was doing therapy with. I was doing it with them individually, not together. They had been married for 27 years. So I was working with the wife and I was working with the husband. Well, one morning I was on a speaking trip, and they happened to be in a certain part of the United States. I want to keep this as confidential as I can, but still explain the story. I met up with them. They had rented a home, and they were vacationing, and I met up with them. And one morning, the husband was gone, and the wife and I were sitting having coffee. Well, she started to explain to me, this was a 27-year marriage, she started to explain to me, and she was very open. She didn't hold anything back, so nothing was sacred ground when it came to talking about their physical intimacy. So she started telling me a story about the depth of their physical intimacy. And what she was telling me was that they would have sexual encounters once a year, and that they were emotionally and physically disappointing. I'll just use that word. They were emotionally and physically disappointing. And so I went on to say to her, well, consider something. Just, I want to share something with you. Just consider this. The woman's anatomy, the way the woman's body is created, the woman's anatomy is a receptor. So their physical anatomy, they don't have to be in a certain emotional place because of the way their body is created. Now, of course, there are shifts in the female anatomy during sexual encounters, but their body in and of itself is a receptor. The male, on the other hand, is not that way. The male has to manufacture or be in a certain emotional place in order to be physical with a woman. So it's a very different dynamic, completely. Completely different. So sometimes men have to fantasize in order to, and I don't like this word, but it is a word that's commonly used, they have to fantasize in order to perform. Or they have to be stimulated, meaning there's an alcohol factor or some other factor, especially nowadays when pharmaceuticals are advertised all over mainstream television, and I'm not quite sure how parents address that with their seven-year-olds, but that's a whole other part. So I'm explaining this to her. And she looks at me and she says, well, she's trying to process this, and she says, well, he tells me he loves me all the time. And I go, now, wait a minute. That has nothing, that doesn't relate to what I'm sharing with you. Telling you he loves you doesn't relate to him being emotionally in a place that stimulates his body, especially after 27 years. Doesn't work that way. I went on to tell her, I said, you know, sometimes men have to fantasize, and sometimes they fantasize about other things. And she goes, what do you mean, other things? And I said, well, other people. And she was appalled by that. Okay, she thought that was disgusting. And I said, well, there's also another part of this, which is very important. There's a term called projection. It's a term in psychology, but it's a mainstream term as well. And I said, when one partner projects to the other partner, and they can do this non-verbally, they can non-verbally project. So if a woman non-verbally projects at her significant other that he isn't enough physically, the man will withdraw. He'll do the opposite that the woman would think. The woman may think that he would become more aggressive, but that's not what he does. He withdraws. Again, this is based on 30 years of research, so it doesn't apply to all men and all women. So I said, you know, there is a pattern, and the only reason that this doesn't happen in every relationship is because emotional intimacy exists. When emotional intimacy exists, the man and the woman will have a conversation about the very things that I'm sharing right now. They will talk about this. But they don't in most relationships. It doesn't happen because it's not comfortable. So the end result of the conversation, now this particular man and woman are divorced, and they got divorced numerous years ago, and it was a result of a lack of emotional intimacy. There was no emotional intimacy in the relationship. And of course the woman when that kind of situation exists, what is the first thing the woman thinks when the man withdraws? The first thing the woman thinks is the man's having an affair. That's where her brain goes. And in this particular situation, the man was not having an affair. The man was emotionally pushed away by nonverbal projection, nonverbal communication. So the need for emotional intimacy on a scale of 1 to 10 is a 10. If you want to have a great relationship with somebody, you must be emotionally intimate. And if they reject
Gary,
you...
Gary, I'm going to interject for a moment.
Yeah, absolutely.
When I hear you say 1 to 10 is a 10, I think that the higher numbers, 8, 9, 10, are true for women. I don't believe that's true for men. As Billy Crystal said, women need a reason to have sex. Men just need a place.
You're reinforcing my point that I've kind of danced around, and my point is this. No matter how you look at this or how you dice it and slice it, sex in and of itself, in most cases, not all, is short-term gratification. It is a mechanical act. It is two people acting out mechanically. They're using their body to get an end result. Can you use your body mechanically in the act of sex to manufacture love? Not in my world, you can't do that, and not in my research, you can't do it either. Now, in other people's research, because I've looked a lot in other people's research, there are psychologists who say that you can create or manufacture love via the act of sex. That's never been my personal history, and it's never been the history of the people I've interviewed over 25 and 30 years. That's not
But isn't
their
it true that men and women have different things going through their mind, their body, totally, totally different?
Absolutely.
The women I know, and myself certainly included, it would have to be some emotional thing. Not to say never, you just want the physical intimacy without the emotional intimacy, but certainly much more so for women that it has to matter on other levels as well.
I absolutely agree, and that's why I'm saying this is. These are generalizations based on my research. Yes, there's an old saying, I don't even know where it came from. Men are external, women are internal. So women internalize things,
yes,
and men externalize things. So there is absolutely no question that when a woman is being physical with a man, there is an emotional, there's an emotional part of it that may not exist in the man. There's a different emotional part in a woman because she's internalizing it. She's giving it a meaning that is beyond a mechanical act. Because when and these are not my words, this is research. You can research, it's all over the internet, and it's called a mechanical act. And so my history, I was married for 7 years. My history, and I've had numerous relationships, long and short term. My history is love, making love or creating love via physical intimacy or sex was not the case. Did I love my wife? Yes. Did she love me? Yes. Was it somehow connected to the physical intimacy? No, it was not. And now, I mean, what you have now, and this is just, it's a dilemma. What you have now is, generally speaking, self-worth is lower now than it's been. Part of that is because the millennials, people born after 1984, not all of them, but a high percentage of them really lack self-worth. Why? There's a why behind it. It's generational. We go through generations, and as we go forward, we lose our foundation. Back in the 50s, generally speaking, people got married for life. They didn't get married as an experiment. They didn't get married because they knew they could get an easy divorce and they'd walk away with assets, financial and physical. That wasn't the case in the 50s and 60s. But today, in some cases, marriage has been turned into a business. It's the business of marriage. But it goes with the territory. It goes with where we are heading with an apparent lack of moral and ethical foundation. And of course,
I get all that, but I still feel strongly that what goes through a man's brain is very different than a woman's. I'm
no
going
to
say this was said of women by an anonymous author. Sometimes we make love with our eyes. Sometimes we make love with our hands. Sometimes we make love with our bodies. Always we make love with our hearts. That was anonymously, but I could say that there's an example of what would be more true for women.
Yeah, and I ask people in my research, I'll go up to somebody, man or woman, and I'll go, how would you know if you were unconditionally loved? How would you know? How would you know it? And when I ask that question, it's amazing. It thought provokes people to the point where they have to really sit and think about it. How would I know if I was unconditionally loved? I mean, that goes back to Gary Chapman's book, The Five Love Languages, because in order to feel loved, not everybody does it the same way. There are many ways to communicate that. Using the words alone, just telling somebody I love you, that can mean a lot of different things. I romantically love you. I love you.
A friend.
It can mean I trust you. I posted the other day, in my lifetime, because I'm trustworthy. And boy, your listeners need to really take this one in. Because I am trustworthy, I tend to blindly trust other people. That is a huge, can be a huge emotional, financial, and physical mistake. Do that. But it is the nature of a person who is trustworthy to do that without checking in. I mean,
I want to go back to what you said on all that research. It was such a great question. How do you know when you're unconditionally loved? For me, it's when one heart feels the other. What did your research tell you about that? Is the biggest consensus on that one?
Well, I researched the definition of love. It's all over the parking lot. I mean, you Google that, it's all over the place. And see, I go back, and this is my life experience, and it's my research experience. Love has its foundation in trust. That's where the foundation is. Now, love comes from the heart, not from the head. It comes from the heart. But
and something on just on that one, another great quote by an unknown author, love puts the fun in together, the sad in apart, and the joy in a heart.
Correct. And so when I make the statement, love has its foundation in trust, you must trust yourself. You must trust your heart. You must trust your intuition. You must pay attention and stay awake. You know, I have men friends who live down the street from me on the island. I have numerous men friends, married men friends. When they're around me, they will make jokes. They'll say things in front of me to each other. They'll go, "So, who'd you have sex with last night?"
Mm-hmm.
Do you get the gist of that? The gist of that for your listeners is what they're saying is, who were they fantasizing when they were being physically intimate with their wife? Who were they fantasizing? That's the
mm-hmm.
joke. That's the men's joke that a lot of women don't know about. Men are going, "Who did you have sex with last night?" They don't mean physically. They mean emotionally. While you were with your wife, who were you thinking about? I was doing a presentation in where was I? I was in Palm Springs. And I don't usually, unless requested by presentations, I don't usually do sex content. But I get requested. So I did a lot of sex content in this presentation I did in Palm Springs. And two women pulled me aside in the hallway afterwards. And they looked around to make sure nobody could hear. And they both whispered to me, "Gary, do you know women fantasize too?" And I went, "Oh, really? You're kidding me."
That's
funny. I mean, seriously?
That's
women
funny.
Do that? Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
And I've also done presentations where I explain that whole fantasizing thing, that men fantasize about the next door neighbor or whoever. And some women will say, "You know what? I don't care who they fantasize about. They can fantasize about anybody they want to, as long as our physical intimacy has quality to it. They can think about anybody they want to." And other women will think that's appalling. So you see, it happens because we're human, and because we have human feelings and we have human needs. We have the need. We're living in the area of short-term gratification. Good grief. Ashley Madison, "Life is short. Have an affair." Where are we going? There's 57 million people on Ashley Madison. "Life is short. Have an affair." What that's saying is life is short. Be dishonest. Life is short.
Yes. Quite true. And yeah. It is said that a baby is born with a need to be loved and never outgrows it. And, folks, what I want to say to you, we hope you never outgrow your being loyal to our show and listening to it every day. And here's some reasons why you should.
Listen to me. I have something to say about a wonderful way to start your day. A way to stimulate your mind and increase your energy, make you feel so good. And guess what? It's free. Weekdays at 11 a.m. Eastern, hear the Joyce, Barry, and Friends show. You'll find it on the internet, on Blog Talk Radio. This show is upbeat and fun and very inspirational. It's informative, educational, and very motivational. There's the Coach's Corner, great quotes and news. There are suggestions, perspectives, and advice you can use to enhance your life and improve your health, plus clever, simple ways to increase your wealth. Joyce's perceptions and personality will keep you captivated, and her guests from many walks of life will always keep you fascinated. When Joyce and her friends speak, it's like you're in the conversation. This is part of what makes her show so unique, really a sensation. For Joyce's friends are not only the guests you're listening to, they're everyone who is tuning in. Yes, I do mean you.
So refer your friends and family. They'll be so pleased to know. And let's make Joyce, Barry, and Friends the number one worldwide radio show.
And, folks, we ask that you partner up with us in having that happen. simply go to joycebarryandfriends.com. You will see my picture on the upper left of the home page, and right under it, it says follow. And if you click on that, you will get an email about every show, every guest, every topic. You need not miss any of our shows. Know that they all go right into our archives, so if you can't join us between 11 and noon Eastern, 5 days a week, which are the weekdays, know you can hear our shows, download our shows 24/7. All shows are in archives. And a couple of shows I really want to invite you to check out is the one with Gary King on December 2, 2016, The Happiness Formula. Great show, great book. You don't want to miss that. And another one, Gary referenced that he gives people the exercise of listing their five most important qualities in a relationship, and we did a whole show which covered that quite thoroughly on February 13, 2017 in our archives, Life Relationships, the Ultimate. So you can arrow down to those dates, or you can go to the upper right of the homepage, type in Gary King, and all his shows will come up. So you might want to do that. And before we proceed further, Gary, why don't you tell them a little bit about your website and what there is to check out in GaryKingLive.com.
Thanks, Joyce. What I'm about to do, my website is GaryKingLive.com. If you want to reach me personally, I have two websites. My personal website, because even though I do not have a degree in psychology, I practice the HIPAA law, so I don't give people's names and I don't give details. So if you want to contact me and ask me personal questions, it's KYNGME. The number 2 at AOL. So it reads King Me 2, but King is spelled with a Y instead of an I in the email address. And then my business one is Gary@GaryKingLive.com. So I respond to people all over the world. I do it daily. I get a lot of personal questions. I am what's called a servant soul. That's who I am as a person. I'm a servant soul. I've been down the materialism path. I've already done all that stuff. I've already done the acquisitions and all of those things. And so my book, The Happiness Formula, is the why. Because in life you'll discover, hopefully you will discover, that everything that happens to you is not about how or what, it's about why. So we are all children in big bodies. Don't ever forget that. We're all children in big bodies. And in order to figure ourselves out, everything on planet Earth has an owner's manual, from your car to your TV to your iPad to your iPhone. But the most complex thing on the Earth is a human being, and we don't have an owner's manual. That's why I wrote the book. The why is why I wrote the book. The why. Why do we do what we do? Why do we wander around looking for things outside of ourselves that we think will make us whole? Because your life is based on what's inside you, not on what's outside of you. That's what the book is about. If you're ever going to find inner peace, fulfillment, and happiness, you are not going to find it in another person, because you have no control over another person. The only person you have control over is you. And if you leave it up to other people, if you leave your validation, your feeling of being enough, you leave it up to a significant other or a job or something, you're going to wind up at some point in a void. And that's why I do what I do. It's all about the why. So ask yourself the question, why, which leads to the five things. Why did I choose this person to sleep with? Why did I do that? What was your outcome in doing that?
Gary, I would like to know what you mean by the catch and release strategy.
Well, this is a true story. Through my 25 years on the road in the personal development industry, I worked with my staff that I worked with was 90. And so at the end of events, we had a production office that we all shared desks in, a huge production office. And after at the end of one event, I was overhearing a conversation with three female colleagues. There was four of us in the office, me and my three female colleagues. And one of them was talking about meeting this man. She had met this man. She was very excited. She was very attracted to him. He was saying all the right things. And every time they went out, he was trying to manipulate her into going home with him. And she kept refusing. Well, it was the week of her birthday. It was a Wednesday night. They were out on a date, and he was telling her everything she wanted to hear about her birthday, how special it was going to be, and he was going to take her to this fabulous restaurant, and they were going to have a great night out, and it was just going to be amazing. So what did she do? She caved in and went home with him that Wednesday night and spent the night with him. So I'm overhearing the conversation. So she said, oh, my God, the next day, he never called me. It's Thursday. He never called me. So now it's Friday morning. It's my birthday. He never called me. I waited till noon, and I called him, and he was passive. He wished me happy birthday, but he didn't say anything about the date and the fabulous dinner. And she said, I couldn't figure any of this out. Well, I'm listening to the conversation, and finally I said, would you like a man's perspective on this? Absolutely. Absolutely. And I said, okay. So you all know I live in Florida, right? They said, Florida is a huge fishing state. I mean, Florida's all about fishing. We're surrounded by water. I said, there is a term commonly used in fishing. It's called catch and release. And I said, so what has happened to you is you have been caught and you have been released because it was all in the catch. It was all in catching the desired object. I caught the object. Now there's no use to pursue any longer. Do men do this? All the time. Do women do this? All the time. Why do they do this? It all goes back to the why. Why did this man do this? Why did this man entice the woman into going home with him? And then when that act was over, he got his outcome, and his outcome was short-term gratification. He fed his ego. He validated himself. He did all those things. Are they wrong or are they bad? Are they right or wrong or good or bad? They're neither. What they are is human. That's what humans do. And the problem with that activity like that is it's disingenuous. It is not genuine. You know, there's a television commercial running now. It's really funny. And it's about a credit card, but it's a man and a woman who go out on a date, and the man says, well, I'll probably text you in the next 3 or 4 or 5 days after the date. And the woman says, yeah, well, I probably won't return your text. And then the guy says, yeah, we're not going to see each other again, are we? And she goes, no, we're not. And it's a commercial for a credit card. But the reality of it is there is no substitute for being real. There's no substitute for authenticity.
I just want to go back to that catch and release strategy,
yeah,
and the way you explained it.
Yeah.
There is a great book out, and I saw the movie again on TV this week, He's Just Not Into You. And
oh,
it goes through all those very things. The heading of each segment is that's such a normal thing for men, and women hold on to it. I'll call you later. And they're sitting there with a phone, right, staring at the phone to make it ring. He's just not that into you. It's a very good resource for that kind of thing.
Yeah, and of course now what do we have? We have social media where the game is so easy to play. I have male friends who it just boggles my mind. They're constantly on Plenty of Fish or all these other things. I've never been on one of these sites. And my friend will meet someone. I have numerous male friends who do this, okay? They meet someone and they tell me they're the one. They're the one. And I go, okay, what exactly are you basing this on? What five qualities in order of importance are you basing it on? And then, of course, 1 month later, they're not the one anymore. And, you know, that's why I say there isn't any substitute for being real and being authentic. If you're real with somebody and you're authentic and you open up your heart and they reject you, both people won. For one, because you don't want to be in a relationship with somebody who's inauthentic, because you can't get anywhere. You have to guess at their responses, and that's back to trust again. If I say something to somebody, it's exactly how I feel, and it's exactly what I mean. I don't do head games, because I used to do that, and it's a dead-end street. That whole head game thing, who can I attract into my space and who can I score with, and that proves that I'm attractive or I'm good or I'm something. It doesn't prove anything other than you're insecure. That's what it proves. If you have self-worth, you don't have a need to play the game. And unfortunately, most of the population can't quote three or four traits of the 20 basic traits of self-worth. And that's where it all comes from. That's the why. If you have self-worth, you look at life completely different. If you have self-worth, that's why I wrote the book. I wrote the book to serve people. That's the why behind the book. To sell a million copies just means I can help a million people. To sell 5 million copies, I help 4 million people more. Because everybody that reads the book feeds back to me, you helped me so much to define what I've done and why I've done it. That's because the first third is autobiographical. I tell my life story. People go, I can't believe you were so vulnerable in your book. Well, if I'm not vulnerable, how can I teach people to be vulnerable? I have to eat the cake I bake.
You have to walk the talk to be credible, absolutely.
Of course.
Gary, how would you like to sum this show up? What message would you like to leave our audience?
Here's the message in regard to sex/physical intimacy/emotional intimacy. It is exactly what it says it is, into me see. If you are uncomfortable letting a person look inside you first, because you will never find someone to love you more than you love yourself. And if that's your goal in life, and you're going to use your physical body to facilitate that, my experience, both personally and over 30 years of talking to people, is their heart gets broken. And you don't want to walk around with a broken heart, especially if it's self-inflicted. Because the reality of it is, nobody can break your heart. You're the only one that can break your heart. And I learned that the hard way, believe me, the very hard way. So the whole thing, the end result is inner peace, joy, and happiness. That's the end result. The question is, what path will you walk to attain those three things? Because that is the end game. Inner peace, happiness, and joy. That's the end game. That's why people do what they do. That's why all seven people do what they do. They just have all different strategies. I'm going to make $1 billion. I'm going to own a Ferrari. I'm going to have a trophy wife or trophy husband. Or I'm going to be a celebrity. Or, oh yeah, I ask teenagers, what do you want to be when you grow up? Famous? Oh, great.
So great show, as always. Look forward to the next one, as always.
Me too.
And you're right, self-esteem is at the bottom of all of it, about love
and
sex. As Woody Allen said, don't knock masturbation. It's sex with someone I love.
Exactly.
And so I want to say thank you.
Yeah.
Always love having you on the show.
My pleasure.
All the shows are home runs for sure. And folks, I want to leave you with my special prayer for all of you. May yesterday be the last day, the very last day of your struggles, your suffering, your ill health, your misfortunes, your problems, your pain, your worries, your troubles, your trials and tribulations. May today be the first day. It is the first day of the rest of your life. May it be the beginning of the very best of your life, with extraordinary wishes granted and dreams coming true. Make this the most meaningful year of making more money, good health, good luck, good fortune, attracting special people and opportunities, creating magical memories, and manifesting marvelous miracles. So, folks, that's our prayer for you, and we really invite you to sing along with us, dance along with us, and laugh along with us, and you can do that starting right here, right now, to the Joyce Barry Mash.
I was listening to Blog Talk Radio when my ears heard something that I did know. From the speakers of my laptop, I heard a voice. It was the White Oprah, also known as Joyce.
He did the MASH.
The Joyce Barry MASH.
Joyce Barry MASH.
She is a coaching smash.
He did the MASH.
You'll catch on in a flash.
He did the MASH.
The Joyce Barry MASH. I felt so inspired by her show, and her poetry was just so good, you know. I want to listen to Joyce again and again. As Joyce would say, if not now, when?
He did the MASH.
The Joyce Barry MASH.
Joyce Barry MASH.
She is a coaching smash.
He did the MASH.
You'll catch on in a flash.
He did the MASH.
The Joyce Barry MASH.
Wow.
Joyce knows all about having fun.
Wow.
She's a home business wizard and she's just begun.
Wow.
She's
wow.
a coaching sensation for not just me or
wow.
you or her. It's for everyone.
Then you can MASH.
Do the Joyce Barry MASH.
Joyce Barry MASH.
She's a home business smash.
Then you can MASH.
You'll catch on in a flash.
Then you can MASH.
Do the Joyce Barry MASH.
Have a fantastic day and listen to Joyce Barry and Friends.